Usually when we talk about a painting, we kind of just think of it as a window.
Right, like something you just stare at.
Yeah, exactly. You stand in a gallery, you look through that framed square on the wall, and you just observe a scene, like a mountain or, I don't know, a bowl of fruit, maybe a stormy ocean. And it's this very passive experience, right? You're standing there, you're safe, you're separate, and the art is just over there, trapped behind glass.
Yeah, safely contained.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what happens when the paint on a canvas refuses to just be a window? Like, what happens when it basically reaches out, grabs you by the collar, and demands that you completely reconsider your entire relationship with the natural world around you?
Oh, that's a great way to frame it.
Right. So today, we are exploring a worldview that doesn't just ask us to look at nature, but to actually recognize ourselves within it. We are diving into a stack of excerpts from this really fascinating chapter titled Naturaleza y Animales, which translates to Nature and Animals, and is from an artistic book called Trastio by Jairo Duque.
And, I think it's important to say right off the bat, this is definitely not your typical coffee table art book.
Okay, let's unpack this. What makes it so different?
Well, what we're really looking at here is an art critique that doubles as a full-blown ecological manifesto.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Duke uses visual beauty as like a delivery mechanism for something much heavier. He's actively pushing you to see animals not just as wildlife or, background scenery, but as actual sentient spiritual beings.
So he's going way beyond just painting pretty pictures of birds.
Way beyond. He completely skips the dry academic approach to ecological ethics. Instead, he uses the immediate visceral impact of his art to provoke these really deep and honestly often uncomfortable ethical questions about how we coexist with living things.
So he's setting a baseline right from the start.
Exactly. The baseline he establishes right from page one is one of absolute respect, defense, and recognition of the dignity of all living beings.
Okay, so we are starting this journey with the macro view, the grand environmental backdrop. Because before Duke introduces us to the specific, actors in this biological play, he has to paint the stage.
Right, set the scene.
Right. And the stage he chooses is the second part of a series called La Ciénaga Grande de Santa Marta.
Which is just a gorgeous, vital area.
Yeah. And for those who might not know, this is a massive, sprawling aquatic ecosystem.
It really is. And in this chapter, Du presents five watercolors dedicated entirely to this specific territory. But the thing is, he isn't just painting a topographical map or like a generic pretty swamp.
Right. The source text emphasizes that he is capturing the sheer visual richness of the ecosystem by focusing intensely on the harmony between three specific elements, right?
Yes, water, vegetation, and light.
And the source material highlights the ecological and symbolic relevance of this place, describing it as a refuge, a transit point, and a home for multiple species, especially migratory birds.
So many migratory birds, yeah.
You know, when I was reading the descriptions of these paintings, the image that just kept popping into my head was a bustling international airport.
Oh, I love that analogy.
Like, you have the arrivals, the departures, the desperate layovers, where these exhausted travelers need fuel and a safe place to rest before their next, thousand-mile flight.
They absolutely depend on it.
Exactly. The Ciénaga Grande functions as this crucial global hub where absolutely everything is interconnected and timed perfectly.
That airport analogy actually gets to the very heart of what makes an ecosystem function. Because, I mean, an airport relies on a massive, unseen, highly sensitive infrastructure to keep thousands of moving parts perfectly synchronized, right?
Yeah, there's so much going on behind the scenes.
Exactly. And if the runway is compromised or, the air traffic control tower goes dark, the whole system just cascades into failure. In the
Yeah.
Ciénaga Grande, the water, the vegetation, and the light, those are that infrastructure.
They're the runway and the control tower.
Exactly. They are the runway and the control tower for these grand natural cycles. Duke focuses on these elements because they are the foundation that makes the transit of those migratory birds even possible in the first place.
See, I'm struggling with the medium a little bit, though.
How do you mean?
Well, I understand the concept of a bustling, interdependent ecosystem, but I'm looking at a piece of paper with dry paint on it. It's easy to paint a pretty landscape. You put some blue for the water, some green for the vegetation, maybe a nice golden hour glow. But how does the source say these static watercolors actually convey the true dynamic interdependence of a moving, breathing ecosystem.
That is the ultimate challenge of painting nature, and Duke solves it through the literal physics of watercolor.
Wait, the physics of the paint itself?
Yeah, think about how watercolor actually behaves as a medium. You don't get the hard, rigid, impermeable lines of, say, an oil painting.
Right, it's wet and messy.
Exactly. When you apply watercolor, the pigment hits the wet paper and it bleeds. The colors just naturally seep into one another. The blue of the water physically mixes with the green of the vegetation and the yellow of the light right there on the canvas itself.
Oh, wow. So the medium actually becomes the message.
It does. The text points out that Duke achieves this feeling of life by emphasizing the harmony of those elements rather than just illustrating animals in a sterile, isolated box.
Because they bleed together.
Yes, by showing the light physically bleeding into the specific vegetation that grows in that specific water, he is demonstrating why this territory's symbolic value as a sanctuary matters for global natural cycles.
It makes a lot of sense.
The interdependence isn't shown through motion. It's shown through the impossibility of separating the elements. I mean, if you try to remove the water from a watercolor painting,
you completely destroy the painting.
Exactly. And if you remove the water from the Cienaga Grande, the sanctuary simply ceases to exist. It visually forces you to understand the fragile interdependence between natural cycles and animal life.
So an ecosystem isn't a collection of separate objects. It's just a single fabric.
Exactly.
But an ecosystem like the Cienaga Grande isn't just empty infrastructure. If the water and light are the stage, who are the actors actually living on it?
Right, the inhabitants.
Yeah, the source material notes that these sweeping landscape paintings are in direct dialogue with pieces dedicated solely to the animals themselves.
And this is where Duke deliberately moves from the macro environment to the micro. Individual lives within it. And I have to say, this is where he assumes a very clear, unapologetic position defending non-human life.
He doesn't hold back at all.
Not at all. He asserts through his portraits that animals are sentient beings. They aren't just biological machines operating purely on blind instinct.
Right. They aren't robots.
No, they are carriers of their own spiritual dimension. They are actively participating in a common consciousness that links the plants, the animals, and us.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. I want to zero in on one specific painting the text focuses on to make this point, because it carries a very heavy title. It's called Angustia, which translates to anguish.
Yeah, it's a powerful one.
The source says this piece highlights the complex emotional and social lives of animals through gestures of solidarity, cooperation, and mutual care. And it frames this behavior as an inherent, quote, natural ethics.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, pushback here, usually we think of nature documentaries showing us the harsh survival of the fittest. You turn on the TV and it's predators chasing prey. It's brutal. It's harsh.
Mm.
So when Duke paints this idea of natural ethics and mutual care, are they saying empathy is just as natural as competition?
He is absolutely saying that. And it's honestly one of the most profound arguments in the entire deep dive.
Really?
Yeah. Duke is fundamentally challenging that information overload we get from a media landscape that portrays nature purely as a battlefield.
Right. Nature red in tooth and claw.
Exactly. We are culturally conditioned to view the wild as this place of ruthless, individualistic survival, where the strong simply eat the weak. But Duke uses a piece like Angustia to demand that we look at the other half of the biological reality.
Which is what exactly?
Well, that survival isn't just about sharp teeth. It is heavily reliant on cooperation.
Like the capacity to care for the pack or the flock or the herd.
Exactly that. Solidarity, mutual care, and forms of natural intelligence that reveal deep emotional complexity. Those are just as vital to survival in the natural world as competition.
I mean, I guess you see that with, like, elephants mourning their dead.
Yes, or wolves bringing food back to injured members of their pack. By focusing on the intense emotional weight of anguish and the corresponding response of solidarity among the animals in the painting, Duke is basically demanding that you recognize a shared spiritual consciousness.
He's saying we aren't the only ones who care.
Right. He proposes a worldview sustained by empathy and coexistence. The capacity to care for one another is not some uniquely human trait that we invented. It is a fundamental property of the natural world.
That completely flips the script on how we view ourselves, doesn't it?
Hmm.
I mean, we like to think of human ethics, our morality, our laws, our charities, as this elevated, civilized thing that separates us from the quote-unquote beast.
Oh, totally. We love putting ourselves on a pedestal.
Right. But this artwork argues that ethics, cooperation, and empathy were already there in the wild long before we showed up to give them names.
Mm.
We aren't inventing empathy. We are just tapping into a natural resource that already exists.
And because that empathy is already there, it means our connection to the animal kingdom isn't just biological. It's deeply psychological and spiritual.
Uh-huh.
We share the exact same foundational drive to connect and protect.
Okay, so we've looked at the massive scale of a migratory sanctuary, and we've looked at the emotional depth of wild animals experiencing anguish and solidarity. Now, the source material takes us into how this natural empathy manifests across totally different, unexpected scales of animal life. It shifts focus to the fundamental role of keystone species for planetary sustainability. Specifically, it names the hummingbird, the colibri, and the bee, the abeja.
Ah, yes. These are the unseen heavy lifters of the ecological world.
The essential workers.
Exactly. The text notes that their daily labor in the processes of pollination is presented by Duke as a symbol of equilibrium, interconnection, and just profound ecological responsibility.
Even though they're so small.
Right. They are physically tiny, but their function carries a planetary weight. Without the bee and the hummingbird, the grand sweeping landscapes of the Cienaga Grande that we talked about earlier would simply wither and collapse.
I have to be honest, though, the way the chapter structures this next part really threw me off a bit.
Oh, yeah. How so?
Well, right after discussing these vital wild pollinators that literally keep the planet spinning, the text transitions into an intimate homage to the artist's family pets.
Oh, right.
It actually names them Marley, Tabby, Stella, and Frida. The source states these pets are recognized not just as companion animals, but as effective members of the family nucleus.
Yeah, it's a big shift in scale.
The huge shift. So what does this all mean for you, the listener? I mean, we go from the cosmic ecological responsibility of bees and hummingbirds straight to a tribute to pets named Marley and Tabby. How do those two things belong in the exact same artistic chapter?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it actually makes perfect sense. The scale is completely different, obviously, but the underlying principle is identical.
How so?
Both extremes, the wild pollinator ensuring global biodiversity and the domestic dog sleeping at the foot of your bed, they are both manifestations of our absolute non-negotiable reliance on interspecies relationships.
Okay, so whether it's a bee or a beagle, it's ultimately about the relationship.
Exactly. Think about the phrasing the text uses. Effective members of the family nucleus. In plain English, that means these animals aren't just property and they aren't just like biological roommates.
Right.
They are active, emotionally present members of the household who actually shape our daily psychological well-being. So our physical planetary survival depends on the bee, but our emotional survival, our daily experience of empathy, affection, and groundedness often depends on pets like Stella and Frida.
Wow. Okay. So both relationships basically require a baseline of coexistence.
Yes, exactly. They both require us to recognize the dignity, value, and interior life of non-human beings. Duke is showing us that whether you are looking through a macro lens at a hummingbird in the jungle or just looking across the living room at your dog on the couch, you are looking at a being that shares a vital consciousness with you.
You're locked in.
Yeah. You are locked in a relationship of mutual reliance.
It breaks down that artificial sterile wall we try to build, doesn't it? Like between wild nature out there in the swamp and human civilization in here in our homes.
Totally.
The wild, or at least our deep empathetic connection to the non-human world, is literally already sitting right there in our living rooms.
And dismantling that wall brings us to the climax of the source material.
The final painting.
Yes. The entire journey of this chapter, from the bleeding watercolors of the landscape's water and light, to the wild animals showing solidarity in their anguish, down to the massive ecological weight of the tiny hummingbird, and finally to the intimate affection for dogs like Marley and Tabby. It all culminates in this single, definitive painting.
The text notes the title of this final piece is Vínculo de Hermanos, which translates to Bond of Brothers.
Which is such an evocative title.
It is an incredibly bold, intimate title for a painting about nature. I mean, brothers.
Right. It acts as the conceptual synthesizer for the spiritual vision of the entire chapter. The source tells us this piece is the final affirmation that all life forms share a common essence.
So everything comes together.
Exactly. In this final closure, the landscape, the animals, and the human being are no longer separate subjects. They just converge.
You know, reading about that convergence, it feels a lot like zooming out on a digital map.
Oh, like on your phone?
Yeah, exactly. Like when you are zoomed way in on a city, you see these thick black lines separating neighborhoods or states or countries, and you start to think those borders are real physical barriers keeping everything inherently separate.
Right, you think they're set in stone.
But as you zoom out further, those lines just vanish. You realize the Earth is just one continuous unbroken piece of land and water. The borders you thought defined reality simply don't exist. They were entirely drawn by us in our own heads.
That analogy hits on exactly what Vínculo de Hermanos is visually dismantling. I mean, in academic terms, the text is talking about stripping away our ontological hierarchy.
Ontological hierarchy. Okay, meaning what?
Essentially, that is the mental pyramid we have spent centuries building. We put humans comfortably at the very top, acting as the masters or the managers.
Naturally,
right? And we put animals somewhere in the middle, useful, but
what?
Lesser. And we put plants and landscapes at the very bottom, treating them as just raw materials or, you know, pretty scenery.
But Duke's final painting flattens the pyramid.
It shatters it entirely. By titling it Bond of Brothers, he forces the landscape, the animals, and the human being to converge on the exact same horizontal plane.
Wow.
Yeah, they converge as equal expressions of the exact same vital consciousness.
So we aren't standing in the gallery looking through a window at nature anymore.
Right.
We are inside the frame.
This is the ultimate so what of this entire deep dive. It transforms Duke's book, Trestio, from just a pleasant collection of nice watercolor paintings into a highly sensitive transit between art, nature, and meaning.
It demands participation.
It refuses to let you view yourself as an external observer. You are an equal participant, tangled up in the very middle of this massive web of coexistence.
Let's just pause and recap the sheer scale of this journey for a moment, because it's huge.
Yeah.
We started out in the sweeping waters and filtered light of the Cienaga Grande de Santa Marta.
Right, the macro view.
And we learned that a landscape is not just a pretty view. It is a living, breathing infrastructure. It's a sanctuary where deep physical interdependence is the only way anything survives. We then looked into the eyes of wild animals experiencing real anguish and saw that solidarity and empathy aren't human inventions, but deeply embedded natural ethics.
Yeah, and then we zoomed in even further. We saw that the tiny hummingbird carrying a grain of pollen and the dog named Frida greeting you at the door are both holding up different ends of the exact same web.
Right.
One sustains our physical planet and the other sustains our emotional world.
It is such a powerful reminder of how art can fundamentally shift our ethical lens. It doesn't just show us what is out there, it teaches us how to be out there.
It really does. And as we wrap up this exploration, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over to go about the rest of your day.
Okay, let's hear it.
If Jairo Duque's Vínculo de Hermanos is right, and we truly share the exact same vital consciousness as the sprawling landscapes and the animals within them, how does that alter the way you step outside your front door tomorrow morning?
Oh, that's a good question.
If the tree in your yard, the bee on its flower, and the bird on its branch aren't just background scenery, but your spiritual brothers sharing your exact essence, what is your actual responsibility to them?
That is a profound question, and definitely one that will stay with you long after the watercolor paint dries. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We love unpacking these incredible, challenging perspectives with you, and we can't wait to see you next time. Take care, everyone.